is my favorite sport. I like the way to dribble up and down the court, just like I'm the king on the microphone. So it's not the J and Moses Malone. I like slam dunks and take it to the hoop. My favorite play is the alley-oop. I like the pick and roll, I like the give and go. It's basketball for Mr. Curtis Blow.
Hello, everyone. Yes, and indeed. Welcome to this week's weekly yap. We are at episode 9. We are clicking through these. And I'm so excited. What a fantastic week we have in store for you. Today's guest, Timbo Gracchus, Michigan State University alumni, Michigan State University Final Four player from years ago, a great guy working for the alumni office, doing great things in the world of leadership with Michigan State. He's a public speaker. He also has his own podcast called The Sixth Option, and I met Tim a few years ago, was honored to be a guest on his podcast, and now I'm so excited to return the favor and have him on the weekly yap. So Tim and I are going to be talking about his experience at Michigan State, leadership, and performance, really performance from the mindset of dealing with adversity and having to come in and learn and prove yourself. And, you know, one of the things that Live Yes And is all about is how we deal with adversity, and what is our mindset for finding our brilliance, and what is our mindset for creating dynamic cultures. And for me, that Live Yes And mindset is all about having a clear purpose, having clear intentions that's very authentic and powerful to us, and then being able to handle whatever's going on in our life. And yes is the acceptance of it. The and in yes and is our response. It's how we're going to respond to turn something, whether it's turning lemons into lemonade or turning manure into a beautiful garden. How are we going to yes and this situation? And Tim, we recorded the podcast a week ago. And so some great insights. I'm so excited to get to it. But before I do that, a couple of things. I have Tim make a couple of big predictions. Michigan State basketball and Michigan State football had two big games this past week. And I had Tim make some predictions a few days out for both. And I think you'll be pretty excited with his predictions. And so that's exciting. But also, this is Thanksgiving week here in the United States. And so Thursday is Thanksgiving. I hope everyone has some plans to either be with family or friends and just have that be a sacred day of gratitude and just spending time. But the next day is what I'm really, really excited about, because we all know it as Black Friday, right? But if you've been listening to this podcast, you know that for me and a group of people, we are trying to transform Black Friday into Rack Friday for random acts of kindness. And our goal this year is 2,015 random acts of kindness performed and then shared via our social media outlets. And that's at Rack Friday, R-A-K Friday, or go to our Facebook page, which is Rack Friday 2014. That's when we started it in 2014. Or if you go to www.rackfriday.com, that'll direct you to our Facebook page. So just do something. Do one thing. That's a big Live Yes And right there. Doing one thing to bless someone else. And even if you're out at the mall, you're shopping, you're doing your thing, find something that you can do that turns into a random act of kindness. So excited about that this week. So without further ado, Timbo Gracchus. We're both from Flint, Michigan. And again, Tim has the Sixth Option podcast. He works for Michigan State University, and just a great, great guy that you're going to be inspired by. So without further ado, let's get into the weekly yap.
Well, here we go with the Yes And podcast on the line from East Lansing, Michigan. I'm really excited to have this guest on the podcast. It's Timbo Gracchus. Tim, how are we doing today?
Travis, I'm doing fantastic. I was just telling you before we started, the sun is shining. It's 72 degrees. I don't think it gets much better than this in November in East Lansing. It's a big sports week, so things are awesome right now.
And speaking of being a big sports week now, this podcast will not go. It gives us actually the opportunity to be prognosticators here, Tim, but this podcast will appear next Monday. So when people are listening to it, it'll be, what is that? It'll be November 22nd. I think Monday the 22nd, which means Michigan State basketball will already have played Kansas on the Tuesday night, and Michigan State will have gone to Columbus to play Ohio State? And what is the result of those two games, Tim?
I'm gonna go out and say the Spartans will be 2-0 this week in the big games. I'm taking my optimistic view into what's been happening, enjoying the success we've had over the last 15 years in basketball and the last 7 years with Coach D'Antonio in football. I think we're gonna pull off some big wins this week.
I hope you're right. I'll be honest with you. Going into the basketball game Tuesday night, I've got a great sense that they're going to be ready for that game, that Izzo's going to have them ready for that early test. The game, I'm a little nervous about Saturday. The optimist in me is hoping they pull it all together for this game on Saturday. But man, the way the season has gone, I'm nervous. I'm a little bit nervous, but I'm hoping Sparty finds a way to get it done.
I think we're all nervous when it comes to every game, but I'm feeling good about it.
Good. Well, Tim, let's get into the podcast, and because I really want to talk about you. And now, obviously, your playing days have been over for a few years, and now currently you're working with the alumni office at Michigan State, correct?
Correct. Yes.
And so, what is your role on a day-to-day basis?
So my role is something that it's called alumni engagement. Basically, I'm the director of major market engagement. I cover the Rocky Mountain region. But I focus the majority of my time in Chicago, Minneapolis, Denver, Dallas, and Houston. And it's just establishing programs in different ways of connecting our alumni back to Michigan State, either in a philanthropic mindset or capacity or an engagement capacity through one of our alumni clubs that are set up in all those major markets. So we're trying to figure out a way to continue to add value to people's lives even after they're graduated and moved away from East Lansing, so they keep that connection, and we keep bringing something to them far beyond their days of walking around East Lansing.
Excellent. Now, obviously, you have a lot of love for your alma mater to the point that you're still working for them. What did your experience at Michigan State mean to you?
It meant everything to me. You know, it's really where I started to understand the concept of opportunities and how opportunities kind of present themselves, and you have to be ready to take advantage of them when they're there. I grew up a Michigan State fan. My entire family came through Michigan State. But my path, I wasn't sure if I was coming here or not until the opportunity presented itself to walk onto the basketball team in 2000, 2001, right after they won the national championship. And that was my first inclination or first experience with, you have to be putting in the work before you know the opportunity is going to present itself. So I came here at Michigan State as a walk-on to the basketball team, and at that point I thought my journey might just be as a normal, walk-on garbage player, help the team in practice, play
sure.
a pivotal role to the practice team. But I wasn't sure if I'd ever get the opportunity to play any significant minutes in a game. Until after my freshman season, I redshirted my freshman year, and then we had 7 guys leave the team. We had 5 seniors graduate, 2 guys go early to the NBA, and I was forced into a situation where I had to play minutes that following season. So, I was fortunate that I had a coach that believed in everybody having an equal chance of earning their time and their minutes, I did enough, and I figured out a way to bring value to our team and what my role needed to be and how I could fill a role in our team that was significant enough to get me in the court.
Now, let's talk about that a little bit. And for those of you who are listening, Tim is from Flint, Michigan. For those of you who don't know, I'm also from Flint, Michigan. So I haven't lived at home in Flint probably in about 17 or 18 years. But once you're from Flint, you're always from Flint. And so there's that Flintstone pride, without a doubt. And speaking of the Flintstones, Tim, now you go to Michigan State the year after they win the national championship, when the program was basically, the brand of that program was the Flintstones. And now here you are going in the next season, being from Flint. You're probably not the guy most people think of, though, when they think of the Flintstones.
That's true. And it's funny that I actually... And I'm younger than Mateen and Charlie Bell and all those guys. And I grew up huge fans of theirs. I watched them play since I was like 10 years old. So I've been seeing those guys in gyms with them since I was a little kid. So I grew up watching them and as a fan. And when I was a kid in Flint, they made Flintstone t-shirts with those guys' pictures on it. And I actually showed up to one of our workouts wearing that shirt. And I'm sitting there working out with Charlie. He's a senior. I'm a freshman. And he's on the shirt I'm wearing. So, I mean, that was a people kind of they laughed at me about that. But I was fortunate to watch those guys really build a program. And they put Flint on their shoulders at that time. And that was during the start of the change in the economy in Flint with the auto plants, and people needed something to have pride about. There's always been a basketball history in the city, and those guys took it to the next level. And I was excited. I'm still excited and honored to have my name associated with the foundation they built at Michigan State. I tried to come in and uphold the legacy that they built for us all, because they put the standard at a high bar.
So talk to me a little bit. So you decide to go to Michigan State, and you're walking on at that time to one of the premier programs in the country. I mean, and who are returning a ton of starters from the previous year. What's your mindset going in? Because you probably couldn't have picked a more difficult program to try to go and find a place. So what's your mindset going in that freshman season? Is how are you going to sort of leave an imprint and be memorable?
Yeah, and my mindset really shifted, because before I decided to walk on, I had because I had a very good high school career, so I had this expectation that some school was going to come in and give me a scholarship, and I was going to go play on a full ride somewhere. And when that never happened, it was really devastating, because as an 18-year-old, you kind of hold your hat on what everybody tells you in terms of you're a great basketball player, all these good things are going to happen to you, and then you're not real sure how to deal with that kind of disappointment at that time. I was lucky that I had a very good high school basketball coach in Stan Gooch, who he had a relationship with Coach Izzo and the coaching staff, and he started to bring me down to play twice a week. He'd drive me down from Flint to East Lansing. I'd come play a pickup ball, and he saw something in me. He thought I could help play at this level and help the team.
Yeah.
And when the opportunity was presented to me to walk on, I jumped on it. And at that time, I just took the learning from the guys who had come before me, who were walk on, who showed me, this is what walk ons need to do every single day, because the job was important to keep the team ready to play at a high level.
And that's you talk about. I want to talk about just a little bit about Coach Izzo and the impact that he had on you a little bit, because it's funny. Like I said, I haven't lived at home in 18 years. So I haven't even really lived in the state of Michigan for the past 18 years. I've been married for 19. So my wife has known me through the Michigan State dominance, and she has seen me cry, and she's seen more cheering than she has crying, thankfully. But she's a Texan. She doesn't get obviously my, she gets it, but she's an outsider. She's even joked to me. I probably shouldn't admit this on air, but she's like, you would marry Coach Tom Izzo if you could. And sadly, I think there's a little bit of truth in that. I'm sorry. But the funny thing is living outside of state all these years, and I've lived in Boston, St. Louis a few times, Florida a few times, and traveled around. And it's funny, whenever I've had conversations with people about college basketball and specifically coaches, and whenever Coach Izzo comes up, there is this universal respect for him as a coach. And, there's a lot of coaches that are polarizing. If we were talking about Calipari, you're going to have some people that love him, some people that hate him. And there's very few coaches that I think, even if you don't like their team, they sort of still demand that respect. And Coach Izzo, I think, has been able to do that. But for you personally, take us inside the locker room, or take us inside that experience for you. What was it like for you sort of being in that environment, and what did you learn most about yourself?
I think the best way to describe it is, my 5 years in that program are probably the five of the hardest years I've had doing anything. The number one thing I've learned from Coach Izzo is he's never sold his standard short. So he's always set his goal and his standard as a national championship, and he's never wavered on putting the work in that he believes is going to put the team, the program, in a position to be elite and win national championships. He's one of those guys that, and he'll tell you, he might not be the most talented or, know the most about X's and O's when it comes to coaching, but everything he's ever gotten, he feels like he's got through his work ethic. And I've watched him put in 20-hour days consistently trying to get teams prepared and he has such a passion for what he does. And, you know, basketball and not just the preparing guys to be basketball players, but preparing guys to be, you know, good men, to take them from boys to men when they get on campus. You know, he's got an unbelievable eye for reading people and being able to adjust his style to people, but also putting you in a position that, you know, he could put you in a position to make you feel uncomfortable because he feels like you need it to grow, put you in a position where he can build you back up. You know, he can completely undress you and make you feel, you know, like you're at the bottom of the world with you know, if he's yelling at you or whatnot. But
yeah,
at the end of the day, he's always shown for everybody that's ever come through the program that he cares about them as a person more so than as a basketball player. And even to this day, if I have a major life decision or something I really need to flush out, I walk on over to Breslin and I get in his office for an hour or so, and you know, he's given me some great insight into a various amount of topics.
Oh, that's fantastic. And so, you know, this idea of live yes and, Tim, you know, it's really about, for me, it's taking a concept as far as how we respond to how we respond to adversity and life's challenges and our ability to embrace them, to willingly and oftentimes unwillingly be pushed outside of our comfort zone. And then how do we respond when we're in that spot? And so for you, when you look back maybe on your playing career, what was the biggest way you were pushed outside of your comfort zone, and what did you have to do to respond? Is there an instance or two that kind of come to mind?
Now, I think one of the things that was very hard, or it was difficult for me at first, was the concept of trying to step into a leadership role when I wasn't exactly the star player on the team. You know, if you're the leading scorer or the All American, it's easy for you to kind of step into a leadership role and have guys follow you. You know, in my case, I had to make sure that I was working as hard as possible every single day. Just so my effort could be seen, and it could be, you know, really quantified when I said something that I needed somebody to follow. And then, you know, in turn, if I wasn't working up to that standard every single day, it was very easy to see where the drop off was. So for me, that was the hard part. I had to figure out my way when I got on the campus of being, you know, a star in my high school team, and then going to being a player that had to fill a specific role and trying to figure out that role. And I was fortunate that I had an outside perspective of one of his old coaches came to practice one day and pulled me aside. And he said, you know, here's what this team needs. It needs someone to play defense. It needs someone to rebound and get loose balls, do the scrappy things every single day. And if you could fill that role, you can play on this team. And, you know, that was a mindset shift for me right then and there.
Yeah.
That I can do those things every single day, and that was my focus. So, you know, it's reshifting a mindset is hard, especially when you're 18, 19 years old, and then committing to it. And it's really hard when, you know, you're doing it and no one's seeing what you're doing.
Yeah.
So there's no, you know,
yeah,
everybody wants to feel some kind of external reward for what they're doing. And if no one's there to appreciate it, you're not sure if you're doing things right, if you should even keep doing it.
Right. And I imagine for you too, again, when you're coming in and you've been the star of your high school team, you know, you haven't been thinking of yourself as a role player. To then shift almost kind of the way you play or your focus of the way you play, that takes a ton of humility for an 18, 19 year old kid. What do you think it was about you that allowed you to make that shift?
Well, yeah, the nice thing is that this program at Michigan State has a way of making you humble. I don't care how good you are when you come in, you know, from a walk-on to a McDonald's All-American, you're humbled very, very early on through the work ethic, the pace of work, the other people you're playing with, because you're gonna be run up against somebody bigger and stronger and faster than you as soon as you walk on campus. And the guys that played this program, you know, from coaches down to every player that came before me, they understood and they talk about the program is bigger than an individual player. So that
sure.
is the focus. The focus is, what do I need to do to help this program continue to grow and continue to get to the level we want it to get to? It, people, so they figure out very quickly that they can achieve their individual goals if they make sure that the program's in the right spot as well.
Yeah. Now, and maybe that's the answer to this question, but one thing I love doing is I love speaking to high school students, especially those who are kind of getting ready to go to college, and especially athletes, and being able to make that sort of that mental shift from high school to college, and what's going to leave a positive impression with a coach, and being able to, you know, think of the contribution that they're making. If you were to, and I know that you do this, and I know that you do speak to players and to kids, but what is that number one thing when you're speaking to an audience of, say, high school juniors or seniors, and your advice to them, and these might be really talented players you're talking to, but what's the one thing that you would tell them when you step foot on campus, or you step foot in that first day of practice, you know, what would be the best advice you could give them to get them started in the right direction?
I think being humble is probably right up there on the list. I think, I tell people all the time, when one thing that really helps separate, me and a lot of other people is you have to be willing to push yourself to a point that you never thought you could go to. Most people think that they've worked as hard as they can work in some situations, I was able to learn here that I could push myself physically and mentally a lot farther than I actually believed I could. And then once you get to that point, then it sets a standard for how hard you need to be working all the time. Another thing is getting very comfortable in doing your work when nobody else is watching and no one else is there to tell you you're doing a good job. That just comes from me and hours in a gym at night by yourself doing things that you don't know if they'll ever. I think that right there might be the biggest thing right now, especially with the way society is and the culture is that we rely a lot on external rewards right. and recognitions for what we do. We want likes and tweets and favorites and responses, and it's gotten to a point where if kids aren't getting that, it's really affecting them. But if you can figure out how to put in that hard work and understand that, like I said in the beginning, opportunity will present itself. You just have to have a blind faith that you put in the work ahead of time that you'll be ready to take advantage of it.
Yeah, I love that. And I can't remember who said it, but they're talking about their success, kept calling this person an overnight success. And they're like, I've been working my butt off 16 years to be an overnight success.
Yeah,
that whole idea of just because you haven't heard about me until now doesn't mean I just started yesterday, I imagine coming in. That faith that you have to have that it might not be this year, it might not be next year. You hope that it comes along during your career, but you know what? Will you have put the time in when that opportunity does arise? Will you be ready for the moment?
It's going to show up for everybody. It makes so much sense now. My mom, my entire childhood and adolescent life, she had a quote on our refrigerator. She probably still has it there. And it's opportunity is when preparation and luck meet, or luck is when preparation and opportunity come together. Have to be prepared for the opportunity, and that's when luck shows up.
Yeah. And now, and the first thing that you mentioned, you talked about sort of finding that point beyond what you thought you were capable, whether it's mentally or physically. And I can think back to my college soccer playing days. And I'm pretty sure my coach, Coach Johnson and Coach Izzo, would have had a fun conversation with one another. Cause I definitely see similarities in their style. but there's one or two experiences that I remember as a player. And it was usually, at a practice, or it was at a moment where physically, I felt like I'd hit that human level, that limit. Like there's no possible way I can run another sprint or do another lap. But there was one quote that he would say to us over and over again. He would never, he'd never tell us how many we were going to do. He would just simply say, "If you want it to be over with, it never will be." And it would drive me crazy. It drove me crazy. I'm like, what's he talking about? I wanted to. And then, obviously it took a few years out of school to realize what that really meant. It's just that if you give yourself you know, a mental limit of what you're capable of, that's all you're going to get to. And
yeah.
So the fact that you just had to keep going until you said done, like you just, and you would find, okay, I can only do one more. And then you do one more and he'd say again, and he'd be like, okay, no, I can only do one more now. And then you probably push yourself maybe 9 or 10 more than you thought was possible. But,
yeah.
But again, finding that limit for you, was there an aspect of your game or was there a moment where you found yourself beyond so far beyond your comfort zone? What I like to say, you know, beyond your comfort zone is your growth zone, but so
yeah.
far beyond your comfort zone where you were just like, holy cow, there's no way I thought that was possible.
Yeah, there's a couple. I can remember, it seems like in sports, it always happens during strength, like during conditioning. We did something here called 22-22s, where we'd run 22 sprints, and it was on a basketball court. You go down, back, down, and back, and you'd have 22 seconds
yeah.
to run it. And then one day, at the end of our conditioning, our strength conditioning guy changed it to, instead of 22 seconds, he gave us 19 seconds.
Wow.
And it was one of those things where once you made it through the first seven, you kind of got, everybody kind of fell into a rhythm you got to where you enjoyed it. And it became like a team kind of, we're going to push ourselves through this. And we all, you know, it was one of those things where everybody made every sprint. It was unbelievable. And you got down and you're like, I cannot believe we just ran in that time. And then another one, we used to run a treadmill test every year to do our VO2 max. And
yeah.
I like that. I like it now. I hated it then. But I like it because the test could be over whenever you decided it was over. But they would actually get all of your numbers of your blood work, your output, all this stuff. So that would show if you actually blew everything out that you had, if you gave it all that you had, they would
yeah.
know regardless of when you stopped. So you could stop it whenever you wanted to,
yeah.
but they would know whether you stopped it or not. And I always liked that because it put you in that spot mentally where you knew you could quit whenever you wanted to, but you had to tell your body to keep going no matter what hurt. And I like that example.
Interesting. Oh, that's fantastic. Okay, well now, all right, so your playing career is over. You're in the professional world now. I know you're a family man now. So what is it about you every day that gets you inspired to get out of bed?
Oh, I think it's everything. You know, I think the easiest example is, you know, when I hear my son come running down the hallway, you know, just the sound of him every morning inspires me to get up
yeah.
and do something. You know, I get inspired from a song. I get inspired from a book I'm reading, from people. I think, you know, work-wise, I never want to feel complacent or if I'm just sitting in the same position, you know, I get comfortable. That inspires me to keep trying to push the boundaries and find new ways to do things and figure out what excites me. And so that's what keeps me going and on a day-to-day basis. You know, I look back at the example that my parents set for me and with my son and him being four now, I want to make sure I'm putting the right example in front of him and doing the things that, you know, can make him proud and make my family proud and just things that, you know, I want to do things that are fun every single day.
Yeah. And so, and one of the things that I know that you do, and actually was a huge inspiration for me, finally saying yes to doing a podcast, because it was something I'd been sitting on the fence for so long. And when I came across your Six Option podcast, and then you were actually gracious enough to interview me, I'm like, oh man, I need to do this. This is so much fun. for you, what was the inspiration for you behind the podcast?
Same exact thing as you. I was sitting there talking about wanting to do one for a long time, and then I originally had one with a couple former athletes, TJ Duckett and Andre Hudson.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And we were doing that one for a while, but schedules started to get, you know, kind of hectic for those guys. They both have started local small businnesses, and you know, time was getting hard to get us all together to do it. So, you know, I sat on the fence for a while myself, and then I just said, you know what, I'm just going to start one myself. I had so much fun doing it, and I wanted to do it where I put it in a position where I could talk to people that I could learn from. So there's a selfish component to it, but also in the interest of sharing information and getting it out there to people. And, you know, I think I just passed maybe a year in on doing podcasts.
Yeah.
And it's been one of the most fun and hardest things I've done in a long time because, like, you know, staying consistent with anything can get hard. But it's been really rewarding. I've learned a ton, talked to some great people. I'm still going strong and having fun with it.
Absolutely. And for any of you guys listening out there, it is the Sixth Option podcast with Tim Bogorakis. And I think I've listened to most of them, if not all of them, Tim. And I just love the variety of speakers that you've had. I think I just listened to E.T. recently, who you just love feeding off that energy. But I love that how you find a great slice of leadership, of kind of going after that idea of leadership in each podcast. There's one idea that seems to be really kind of coming to the surface right now, and I think maybe Brené Brown has had a lot to do with this. But this idea of the strength of vulnerability, and being vulnerable, it reveals our authenticity. And when you think traditionally of strength and strong leaders, vulnerability probably isn't a quality that comes to mind. Or growing up, kind of a man, you are kind of taught not to be vulnerable. We kind of equate vulnerability with weakness. But now, sort of starting to see it as a strength, as being able to be a connection point or an authenticity point with being able to connect with people. When you think of yourself, and I know it's not always an easy question, but when you think of yourself and your own sort of, you know, vulnerabilities, is there an aspect of your life or an aspect of your development where you're like, oh, I know this is kind of a vulnerable spot for me, but I'm really committed to kind of attacking it and trying to grow it?
Wow, that's such a great question. I'm definitely going to steal that question the next time I do a podcast. So, you know, I'll credit you for it. That's such a good question. And I think it's really important because, you know, give a little context, I've actually spent a lot of time in the last year really trying to dissect myself and kind of figure out really who I am. From a, you know, a personal aspect, I think, you know, of subtraction. I wanted to subtract the things I was doing that were, that were, you know, weren't helping me in any aspect. But what am I vulnerable at? Oh man, I think there's a lot. I think I still struggle, and I have to work on being empathetic towards people in some cases.
Okay.
You know, I found that looking at myself, I'm not even sure if I'm answering your question correctly, but you know, I've had a judgmental component to my life to where I've looked at people and have in a judgmental way. I feel like in some cases it's brought negative energy towards me. There's a ton. I think the more I dig into it, the more I find and the more I enjoy it. Because, you know, figuring out truly who you are it's one of those paths you'll never end on.
Yeah.
Did I answer your question?
No, absolutely. I mean, you got okay. Empathy. Yeah, you got empathy,
yeah.
Before that you said and being judgmental. I mean, that's huge.
One more thing is I've had a touch of complacency in some aspects, especially when it comes to like blogging and writing and podcasting, because too often I've put too much onus on the external from people and not enough on the feeling I get from doing it personally. And so once I'm able to kind of rein that in and say, you know what, it makes me feel good personally when I do these things, that it makes no difference who, if anybody's, you know, listening or reading, the feeling I get is worth it.
Yeah. 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 That's those oxygen things that we have in our life that that we know are kind of taking, feeding our soul and kind of helping us sort of show up. Yeah. Show up on purpose in a bigger way. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, and speaking of stealing questions, my last question for you, and I'm actually stealing this from an intern back at IMG Academy. This guy, he was an intern. He was working, and when we would interview, we would do the media training and the interview training for the NFL Combine guys and the NBA Combine guys. And so we'd have them in the room and trying to grill them and get them out of their comfort zone and help them articulate their why and help them talk through different struggles they've had and really get them to be polished, but authentically polished by the time they were going and meeting with the NFL teams. But it was always tough to really kind of find questions that would kind of throw guys off balance a little bit. And this intern would always pull this question out. I was like, oh, what a fantastic question. I'm going to have to use that in the future. And so the question is, if you could go back and speak to 18-year-old Tim, what is the one thing that you would tell him from what you know about life now?
Oh, geez. I do like that question.
Yeah.
I do like that question a lot. I've heard people use that before, and while I've listened to other podcasts, and I probably should have thought of an answer by now. What would I tell my 18-year-old self? I would tell my 18-year-old self that that all of the things you actually think are important or not. And I would tell him to be nice to people and invest in yourself.
I like it. And now when you said the things that you think are important are not, now are those just kind of more just the superficial stuff that we get sort of distracted by?
As an 18-year-old, you think all the superficial things are there. And then the more people you talk to who have attained all those superficial things that you think you need, they'll tell you that it's, don't base your happiness off external things.
Yeah. And actually, I'm going to ask you a bonus question off of that, because it just makes me think when you look back on your 5-year career, and obviously you're going in as a freshman and you've got these visions of grandeur and, like you said, kind of the superficial stuff. When you look back at the experience, what is the coolest unexpected thing that you took away from your experience?
The enjoyment you can get from really grinding and working hard.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's the old, the journey is better than the outcome, right? The journey is better than destination.
Yeah.
The enjoyment of the journey and the people that are on the journey with you. Because now when I get together with teammates, not a single time do we ever get together and talk about the time we had in practice, the time we spent, working out, the time we spend in buses. It's never about the game. It's always about the lead up to the game. So the journey is where the real enjoyment has come from.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, Tim, man, I'm looking at the clock and I know I probably kept you longer than I probably promised, but I could go on a couple of hours.
We could do this
for sure.
Exactly.
Exactly. So we're going to have to. So the nice thing about doing a podcast is that we're not tied to, time restraints or things like that. So we will absolutely do it again, but I want to be respectful of your time. And I want to thank you so much for returning the favor and coming on the Live Yes And podcast. Eventually I know we've been near missing each other in person a few times, but eventually we're going to have that in-person meeting and we'll get it done, but I'm super grateful. And again, to you listeners out there, please check out Tim's podcast. It is The Sixth Option. Now, Tim, it's on Podbean and iTunes?
Podbean. It's on iTunes and it's on Podbean.
Okay.
So it's thesixthoption.podbean.com. That's where the podcast is. And then my blog is just timbogracius.com, where I post some of the podcasts and some of my writing.
Perfect. Well, Tim, thanks so much. Thanks for being a part of the Weekly Yap. And go Sparty, man. Have an awesome week.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
And that is the weekly yap for the week. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks again to Tim Bogracus. Just a wonderful, wonderful interview. It's great to for me just to go back and listen to it again. And remember, you all, please follow me on social media, Twitter and Instagram. I'm at LiveYesAnd, at LiveYesAnd. And go to my website, www.liveyesand.com. Subscribe to the podcast. Subscribe to my newsletter. And you'll get all the inspiration as far as speaking events and things like that. So that's it, guys. It is Rack Friday this coming Friday. Please, 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 one random act of kindness. Post it on social media, and let's help transform Black Friday into Rack Friday. Curtis Blow, take us out with some basketball.
They're playing basketball.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
We love that
that's my joint,
too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They're playing.
All right, I want everybody to help me out through the basketball.